All right, welcome to the House of Tech, the podcast where politics and tech merge and we chat to leaders of innovation. I'm Fred Chibesta, co-founder of Finder.
And I'm Andrew Bragg, Senator for New South Wales.
All right, we've got an incredible guest today, an innovator, a pioneer in the gig economy. Welcome to the podcast, Tim Fung, who is the co-founder and CEO of Airtasker. Welcome.
Thanks for the nice intro. Thanks for having me.
I've heard the inspiration for Airtasker. Tell us about the moment in time when you went from like an interesting idea to actually maybe this is a business.
So it's interesting. It happened over a couple of months. So the initial spark of the idea was I was moving apartments and I asked a friend to help me move. He's got a business where he makes frozen chicken products. And so he's got a truck that he uses to do the deliveries. And so, you know, when you're moving apartments, you don't have that much money. You're like, hey, can you help me, you know, just put all the stuff in the back of your truck and move. So that was the original genesis of the idea. But then, you know, as with most things, it's not like you react that day and start, you know, building a website or something like that. So it was really like talking about it with a whole bunch of my different friends who have different perspectives and stuff. One of them was my roommate who is in superannuation and he's like really, really conservative. And I used to pitch him ideas like every day. And this was the first idea that he didn't think was totally shit. So that was sort of like ticking the box number one. And the second one, I asked a friend who was working at Bain, the consulting firm, like what he thought about. And, you know, he didn't have that much of an opinion on it, but he went and asked all his colleagues. And they were like, oh, that'll actually be really good. And so it was like the slow percolation of that. And then, you know, I guess a bit of impulsiveness on my side, which probably led to actually starting up.
So you go onto the app, right? And I've used it before. So you go onto the app and you choose a task that you need to have completed. And then someone completes that task. How does the business model work from your point of view? I mean, how do you turn that into a business which has been held out as a significant fintech in Australia? Is there a simple explanation for how you clip the ticket or?
Yeah, so first of all, it's actually the customer who comes and like defines the problem they want solved. You know, they post the task. And so it's not really like, for the most part, it's not them selecting. It's more them saying, hey, here's the problem I've got. And then from there, we've got taskers, the service providers on the platform who'll pitch you and say, this is how I'll solve your problem and here's how much I'll charge for it. And so I guess the nuance there is we don't determine the price and the scope of the job. It's very much like crowdsourced. It's user-generated content. When a customer picks the person and, you know, decides they're going to go ahead with that service, they actually escrow the money into our Airtasker Pay payment system. And then when the job's completed, both sides say, yep, happy that the job's been completed. The money goes out the back to pay the service provider. And at that point, we also charge fees as well. And that's how we make money. I think important call out there is that we only make money if the taskers make money. And that's really core to what we do, which is it's a win-win scenario and our incentives are like 100% aligned. Mm. You know, if you do well, we do well. There's no sort of like, you know, we do well, you don't do well scenarios.
Tell us some of the wackiest stories of things people have got done.
Oh, it's kind of mad. I mean, the ones that I really like are all the like the romantic gestures and stuff like that that people have done. So we had one. Look at these two.
Yeah, I'm going to do one thing.
Now I feel left out. As soon as I mentioned romantic gestures, you two are looking at each other.
I've got a lot of big ideas. I've got a lot of big plans.
Yeah, I've been planning.
Well, we had
Valentine's Day was it's coming up again.
Yeah, well, in 11 months.
In about 11 months, yeah. You've got to think ahead.
You must have missed this year.
Maybe I should do it monthly.
Yeah, but we don't have to wait for Valentine's Day.
Like one of the biggest ones was we had someone who had a Star Wars themed wedding and wanted to have two stormtroopers walk her down the aisle. That was a pretty big task to get up there. We've had like tons of like wedding proposals. There was one that was so lovely. This guy hired 6 Airtaskers. He knew like his fiance, the route that she used to take to walk home. He got all these taskers to wear shirts saying, will you marry me? And to bump into her every kind of block that they walked down the road. And then at the end, he was there. So yeah, some really, really long tail tasks. But, you know, we see thousands of tasks a day. So basically, there's wacky stuff going on every day.
It's a bit like Love Actually, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah.
But I have used the platform before. I've had someone come around to the house to put a painting on the wall because I don't know how to do those sort of things all that well. I mean, I have done them in the past. When I have, I've destroyed whatever painting I had because my hook fell off the wall or the nail fell out of the wall or something. But I've had pretty good experiences, I've got to say. Tell me about the position you're in now. So you made a decision to list last year. Mm. were you always going to list on the ASX? Can you talk a little bit about that process? Was it easy? Was it hard? What could we do in Australia to encourage companies like yours to list here? Because we want to be a tech hub.
Well, I guess the story that sort of led up to the IPO is, you know, for the first sort of 5-6 years of Airtasker, we were doing what a lot of companies do, which is raising money, just trying to grow at all costs, burning tons of cash just to get something going. So we did that. And then in 2019, we made a decision, hey, we've actually got to make this thing actually make some money because, you know, it's easy to just keep burning money. People at some point are going to go, is this a viable, you know, sustainable business? So we spent 2019 getting to cash flow positive and we were able to achieve that, which was really good. And we were very thankful that we took the action to do that in 2019 because then COVID came around in 2020 and that was definitely like disruptive to our business. So it was sort of like day on day, I think we saw volumes drop something like 30%. We're like, oh crap, this could go to zero. That's what we had in our head. What we saw during COVID though was that it bounced back really quickly because being a user generated, like a community platform, basically people would just ask for different services, provide services in different ways. We saw it bounce back. And so we actually started getting really bullish. We're like, hey, this is like a really resilient business model and we're cash flow positive. So how are we going to like scale this internationally? And so we thought listing on the ASX was a great way. And, you know, there were some awesome companies like Afterpay that were able to raise money and be really agile with that. That was the conditions for wanting to list on the ASX. We're primarily an Australian company. Like 97% of our revenue last year was in Australia. So we thought that, you know, building the brand and building trust by being an Australian listed company would be a good thing. And now we're scaling internationally. So who knows where the future is. But I think it was a positive for us to list on the ASX.
Tell us about the gig economy. That wasn't really a thing. And now you guys kind of like made it a thing. And then I guess you've got sort of Uber's made it a part of a thing, delivering and stuff like that. What's happening in the gig economy and what's interesting and what's important for our listeners to know about?
Well, I think first of all, the gig economy is like a pretty umbrella kind of term. And I think there's a lot of nuance underneath it. You know, it's kind of like saying, oh, there's the permanent full-time economy and there's the casual labor economy. And I think, you know, those are both valid categorizations, but there's a lot of nuance within them. I would say that, you know, if you look at something like Uber and Deliveroo, they're really going down this path of sort of standardizing labor, you know, almost kind of saying like 1 kilometer equals this, or like 1 meal delivery equals this amount of money. And so it's really those platforms that are driving sort of like the price and the scope of work that happens on the platform. And, you know, I think that there's value in that, but it's very much like standardized or even commoditized sort of labor. What Airtasker is doing is kind of different because we have the community deciding who's going to do the jobs and who's going to do the prices. And so it's really just a reflection of what happens, you know, in the broader economy, which is, you know, if you previously had a leaking tap, you'd call up 3 tradies, you'd get a price, you'd pick the tradie. If the tradie's good, they're able to charge more. If the tradie's, you know, less experienced, they're probably going to charge less. And so Airtasker is really just a reflection of what people did in the regular economy anyway, but we're making it simpler, easier, and providing the infrastructure to make it lower friction. And one important part about making it lower friction is you enable a lot more jobs to be created. So like where it used to be a pain in the butt to, you know, get someone to move some boxes from, you know, one side of your office to another, you wouldn't be bothered. You'd be like, oh, this is too hard. I'm not going to like put a job out up on Seek and then interview people and go through that process just to have someone do, you know, $500 worth of labor. If we make that simpler and easier, we enable a lot more jobs to be created. And so I think that is the difference that that Airtasker is making. Lower the friction, enable more stuff to happen.
Well, I'm keen on your world domination ideas. And you know, I'm always interested in people who plan to take over the world. I'm proposing to do it one day myself. But I imagine that gives you great perspective on how easy or difficult it could be to run a business in Australia. Do you have any thoughts on what it's been like to run a business in Australia, particularly in relation to taxation, labour laws, any of those big pillars, because we're always looking for ways to improve them, even if politically it's sometimes difficult, we still want to get all that information.
Running a business in Australia has been great, actually. You know, I think it's bloody hard to start a business in general. Like, I think anyone would tell you it's hard and there's lots of things that could be made easier, but I think a lot of those are just, that's fundamentally, it's bloody hard. Like most things can go wrong much more easily than they can go right. And so it's hard anyway. But I think Australia's been really great. couple of the roadblocks we've had, I suppose, has been the R&D in tech. I think that's been really hard because it's sort of, it's there, it's very attractive, but then I think there's been a bit of like to-ing and fro-ing as to how much it feels like it's there to support software tech companies. That's probably been one.
It's definitely designed to be there for software companies, and we've tried to make that very clear, and hopefully those issues have been resolved now.
Well, we definitely had our strife, you know, and, you know, we're a 10-year-old company now, so, you know, we've had ups and downs with that, but definitely some strife in that, so clarity in that space was probably important, but it was a great program. Like, we couldn't have survived in the early days without having that support, so that was really important. I think the other thing is just, you know, software technology companies, you know, in the US, maybe in Israel and different, you know, parts of the world, they've just had like multi-generational experience in building them. You know, there's, I built this company and then out of the proceeds of that, I invested into this company. Yeah. There's just like that, so much experience. And I think in Australia, we're kind of building it from scratch 10 years ago. It's awesome to see that that's progressed, but it still kind of feels like we need to make it really easy to like inject talent into Australia and just make these like step changes in it. And so like I feel like the main answer to that is like PR. You know, like we need to be out there in the world kind of saying Australia's a place to be, you know, and making it really easy to do that. I kind of think about like, say, Silicon Valley. For the most part, they just kind of talk about how Silicon Valley is the place to be. And so that kind of is a big ingredient to it becoming the place to be. And by doing that, they're sucking in all of this amazing talent and it compounds. And so I think we're going to do something to sort of like break that cycle and inject some talent into Australia. By the way, it is massively improving anyway, because we've got super smart people in Australia. We've got some incredibly successful companies, Finder, Canva, Safety Culture. You know, we talk about all those companies. They're building that talent too, but it could always do with an injection as well, I think.
Justin Hemmer's on the podcast. He was talking a lot about, because he has a lot of venues and restaurants, and he was looking for more people to come and help and come in. And he said, you know, he needs another 1,000 people to fill jobs. Do you see that sort of same challenge as well? Like, what do you think in terms of bringing more people into Australia? What's sort of your views and what do you think is important?
Yeah, it's really interesting because we actually see it in two lenses. We see it, one, in our own organization and company, like hiring full-time employees into Airtasker Limited. And then we also see it on the Airtasker platform with like how many jobs are being fulfilled, how many taskers there are who want to be working on our platform, etc. And I think like the resounding theme at the moment is the labor shortage. It's kind of crazy. So I think within Airtasker, the company, I think every software tech company is feeling the same thing. Impossible to be able to easily retain, acquire new talent into the company because there's just so many people building great stuff and there's just not enough people who have the skills to be able to do that. So in the company, that's really obvious. And I think that one of the things we need to do is acknowledge that hundreds of thousands of people left the country during the pandemic. A lot of international students, also a lot of like temporary visa holders, and it's hard to bring people into the country. So I think software product definitely is a thing. On our platform, we're also seeing some interesting dynamics whereby, you know, we used to have a lot of taskers per job posted, but now we're seeing that number's come down a bit. And what is really good about that is it adjusts. The market is paying very well on Airtasker now. So if you have skills and you want to come onto Airtasker, you're getting paid probably 20% more than you were getting paid last year. And we've created a thing called the Airtasker Wage Price Index, where you can actually look at like what are the prices and how are they moving on Airtasker, the AWPI. And you can definitely see that in certain categories, it is really, really increasing, which is great for workers, but at some point is probably going to have an effect on the economy too.
I mean, it's funny, we have this very tired debate about the perils and the bad sides of the gig economy, which is perpetuated by a particular group of people, right? Mainly the unions, because they wanted to defend their ancient economy. And they would make the point that the problem with the gig economy and your business is that you rip people off and people don't get a fair go and all that sort of stuff. My view has always been that this is providing opportunities for people to do work that wasn't possible a generation ago. And people have often made the point about, you know, nurses and other people that have skills don't have the time to do a full-time job or a standard part-time job. I mean, you must have some great examples, I imagine, in your business of particular occupations and particular types of people that can deploy their skills because of this technology.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first thing I think is a really interesting thing that most people don't know about Airtasker is that you get multiple quotes in general on Airtasker. Like you'll get one or two, maybe three or four people who say, I can do your job and here's how much I charge for it. Even when you get multiple quotes at multiple prices, 70% of the time, people do not choose the cheapest person. Like, and that's actually pretty interesting, right? Because you'd think that at least some proportion of the time that that would be the case. But really, it is about skills. And if you think about that anecdotally, most people when they're hiring a plumber or they're hiring someone to come and do a job, you are rating people's skills and their reliability and how good the job's going to get done overpriced. Like most people aren't kind of like, want to hire a plumber and the most important thing is that they're dirt cheap. Like they don't think that. They think, how can I make sure my toilet is fixed and you know it's going to work reliably into the future? So that's an interesting start. I think the other interesting thing is when you look at you know job security and casualization in these words, the way that like permanent full-time work works is that it's sort of binary. It's kind of zero or one. And what we saw during the pandemic is the one, you know, the full-time permanent work, it's actually not as permanent and reliable as you think. So for example, if you were, we had a Tasker who worked at Qantas full-time, but immediately COVID comes around and, you know, furloughed. She actually jumped onto Airtasker and she was able to just pick up work immediately on Airtasker. She was a videographer. And that was very much like a soft landing for her to not go from one to zero, but actually to be like, oh, well, I can pick up work on Airtasker. And then she actually started working her way up back into full-time work. And now she's a full-time videographer on Airtasker. She's been able to buy all of the equipment. And rather than working for a company, own all of her own equipment to be able to do it herself. So I think there's sort of like this sort of soft landing and there's easing back into full-time work. And the flexible labor economy or the gig economy is not, you know, it's not here to replace full-time work. Like I don't think that there's many jobs that should be full-time work. For example, if you manage an organization or you manage something, that's probably going to be full-time work. On the other hand, there's a ton of work that can be created through flexible labor.
We've got a question.
You have a question?
Yeah, that we ask everyone.
I like your questions sometimes.
They're all right.
Yeah, yeah.
They're getting better.
I think you're starting to ease into this. You know, you started out, you were very serious.
Very
and now
serious.
You've started to become a bit more relaxed.
A bit more relaxed.
So I encourage you to continue on your journey. Yeah.
Good feedback.
I'm a bit like in some form, I'm a...
Counsel.
I provide Oracle. Counsel to Fred because he needs some help. Yes. And we all need a bit of help. It's useful, actually, to talk to people.
It's true.
It's good for you.
It is good.
You should do it more often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
We should catch up more often.
Yeah,
I
we
suppose.
Should.
Yeah.
Hang out. You know, Andrew's a great runner.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How far? Like, are we talking like long distances?
Distance.
Well, I'm not sure I'm a great runner, but I run.
What's your longest?
Well, I've done a 52K when I was at uni.
Pretty
serious. That was long. That was hard. I had like shin splints and I had to have Panadine Fort and stuff and... Very bad effect on the body, that sort of stuff, yeah.
So our CTO at Airtasker, Doug, is an ultra-marathon runner. And so he'll often, instead of having a one-on-one meeting, be like, oh, let's just go pan out 10 kilometers. And for me, I'm like...
Do you do it?
I do I do the odd 10 or 11, but I'm crushed by the end of it. And he's just like, oh, this is like 2% of the distance that I usually do. So, yeah.
So question is, if you had an opportunity to go to space right now, would you do it?
I'm actually pretty afraid of space. I would say I've got the, what's that fear of like wide open space? There's like a name for this fear, but you know, like when you're flying over the Pacific, like to the United States or something, I've definitely got that thing where you're halfway between Los Angeles and Sydney. You're like, oh geez, there's a lot of unknown space there. So I'd probably say no, like this year, but this decade maybe, and this lifetime, definitely.
So how's it going in the US? I mean, and what is it like doing business in the US? Is it fun? Is it crazy?
I actually went for the first time to the US, and like since we launched over there 6 months ago, I went for the first time just last week, and it's really interesting because we're actually set up in Kansas City, Missouri. So I'd never been to the Midwest of the United States, and so that was definitely like a new
why there?
New experience. We've got this incredible founder, Bo Fishback, who started a company called Zali back in 2011. He had Steve Jobs investing. He had Ashton Kutcher investing. Meg Whitman, the CEO of eBay, was on the board of the company, and it just grew like wildfire early on. For a whole bunch of reasons, it didn't end up going in the direction they wanted to, and we ended up acquiring them. And so, you know, that's where... And he happens to be based in Kansas City, Missouri. So that's where we're based. United States launching over there, I think, you know, it's definitely a different market. I think one of the most interesting things for me is that AirTasker is built on like network effects and scale. You can't really do AirTasker at a really, really small level. It's like a social network or any kind of marketplace. And so there's real differences between how you need to operate it when it's at scale versus how you need to operate it to get it to scale, like in that 0 to 1 bit. And that's definitely the phase that we're in the United States. So it's really refreshing. We're going over there, we're talking like, we're not talking about, you know, incremental, you know, 50 basis point increases in conversion rates and stuff like that. We're talking about, how are we going to get the next 100 tasks onto the platform? Like, should we go and hand out leaflets ourselves out the front of the, you know, the furniture store? You know, do we need to like engage a celebrity, you know, to do some cool Instagram stuff? And so it is kind of good living in that combination of scale, but also always a startup.
Yeah. I mean, the cultural differences between the US and Australia, I'm sure, mean that there's some language differences and the like that you need to deploy onto the platform. And in your travels there, have you been offered home fries in an American restaurant?
No, I actually haven't. What is that, like the Animal fries at In-N-Out Burger or something? Is that a form of home fries?
Sort of, that's like a different sauce.
Oh, In-N-Out Burger. Yeah. That's the one where you just get the meat, the gherkin, and the sauce.
Yeah.
Is that
pretty
what it
simple
is?
Burgers? Yeah, pretty simple.
And that's the secret menu. You found the secret menu.
Yeah, that's the animal. It's not that secret.
Animal. The animal fries.
What do you mean animal? Is it got animal in the fry?
A little bit.
But isn't it supposed to be potato?
There's a bit of that.
But you know the In-N-Out Burger one in California?
Mm.
Yeah, I like that because it's nice bread, but not too much bread.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you go to a place and they give you so much bread, and you're like, I don't want to eat this. Like, I just want to. Then you feel like an idiot if you take the bread off. So you just eat it, or you eat it, and either way, you feel bad, you know?
Yeah, you feel bad about not eating it.
Every way you look, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
That's why the nice small ones are good.
Yeah.
Do you like a tuck shop burger?
What's that?
Yeah, like an Aussie, you know, pineapple, beetroot, bacon, egg, beef, you know, tip-top bun.
Yeah, I've got one of the... Where do you go for those these days?
Are you a beetroot guy?
I love beetroot.
Yeah, I really like beetroot.
I like pineapple.
Well, I'm not on a burger. Yeah. Oh, no way. I knew there was something wrong with you.
No, I think there's one down at Tom Ugly's Bridge, which is pretty famous. Sam's. You go down there, it's a long queue out the front to get a tuck shop.
We should go out there and we'll do a burger episode.
Where is it?
Down at Tom Ugly's Bridge, you know, when you're heading down southern Sydney?
Oh, yeah,
just over that bridge.
Yeah. Well, I never got on to, you know, the Harry's Cafe de Wheels, they have the
pie
floater?
Floater.
I mean, that's not me. I'm not a pie floater kind of guy.
No.
something like sounds really weird about it.
I can't imagine you eating a pie floater.
No.
I'd like to see it.
It's probably not going to happen.
Could I pay you a lot of money to do it?
No.
Okay.
I guess what's coming up, Tim? What's exciting for you? What's coming up?
Yeah, so I think for us, you know, as much as we're continuing to invest in like building a brand and a product in Australia, I think the US and the UK expansion for us is really, you know, where a lot of energy goes, and it's something very, very new. It's really hard. That's really where I've spent a lot of my energy right now. In the UK, we're already sort of off to the races, which is great. We've got a working, bustling marketplace in London, which is great. But the US, it's really like 0 to 1. we were actually out there last week contemplating, should we go to the Nebraska Furniture Mart car park and start talking to individual customers as they're coming out of the Furniture Mart?
That's Warren Buffett's one, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So,
he bought this furniture shop.
Yeah, it's massive.
Great story.
Yeah, apparently it's like way bigger than IKEA in that area. Like it's a huge megamart. So yeah, really doing that scrappy on the ground stuff. And I love that stuff and spending my time on that. A lot of effort in that. I think the other thing is we've made some really important hires in our leadership team. Hired our first ever CMO and CPO, spending a lot of time investing into the talent and the team in that regard. And, you know, continuing to invest into a good core product experience, which... You know, it sounds like it's easy to do, but it's hard to make incremental gains on something like that.
And what final advice would you give to government about how we can further the fintech sector? Because you're one of the premier Australian brands, and you're keen to pay it forward. I can tell by your participation in this and other events you've visited. So, what would you say to government and the parliament that we should do to support the ecosystem?
It sounds really simple, but I think it's about global PR. I think we've got to be out there talking about how Sydney is a place where, or Melbourne, or, you know, Australia
Sydney,
is a place
Sydney,
where
Sydney's
you can
better
build...
than Melbourne. It's okay. You can say that.
where you can build a great company and then make it easy and even go as far as like injecting the talent over. Like, I think we should be like providing incentives or like making it, you know, or supporting some of these big names, whether they're VCs or whether they're, you know, companies. Like, let's get them out here so that we can inject that talent into the ecosystem and that'll continue to explode.
Well, it's good you've said that because there's been a task called the Global Talent and Task Force Attraction, which has been run by Peter Verwer over the last 2 years, which has just established a website called globalaustralia.gov.au, which is designed to do that. And I think, based on what you've said, the marketing and the positioning of Australia as a global tech centre is really important, and that is something the government can do. So we have sadly run out of time, and Fred has run out of
jokes,
funny things to say. And that is the wrap for this week's chat, and there'll be more information in the show notes at finder.com.au/houseoftech.
There we go.
And don't forget to leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. Like this episode, tell a friend. That's how podcasts get out. You know, your friends tell friends. Subscribe. Tim, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. My favourite part of the podcast was the discussion about the burgers.
Can we go there?
Yeah, we'll go.